That's the Jazz Crusaders with Agua Dulce, meaning sweet water. It's from their 1965 album, Chile con Soul. Chile with Soul. Wayne Henderson on trombone, Wilton Felder on tenor sax, Hubert Laws, I didn't even know he was on this, on flute, Joe Sample, another great, on piano, one of my favorites, Claire Fisher on organ, Al McKibben on bass, Styx Hooper on drums, Carlos Vidal on congas, and Ungaria Garcia on timbales and cowbells. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and guess what? It's Confirmation Day. Confirmation hearings for President-elect Donald Trump's nominees for cabinet-level posts begin today. Senator Jeff Sessions has started off. He leads the pack, facing off with the Senate Judiciary Committee that began at 9 o'clock this morning, and the Senate Homeland Security Committee questions retired Marine General John Kelly at 3 o'clock this afternoon. Well, the hearings are being very closely watched for obvious reasons, and they're looking, I think most everybody's looking for the nominees' views on their prospective roles in the Trump administration, as well as for clues. They're looking to see how the Democrats will be reacting as the standing opposition to the incoming Trump administration. Sessions' multiple embroilments in race issues in the past should sink his confirmation as U.S. Attorney General, civil rights leaders say, and many await Kelly, the Marine General who is up for Homeland Security, Secretary of Homeland Security, this afternoon. They are looking for his responses to their fears, the questions that they still have, that he'll dramatically expand the power and authority of the police and the military in particular, while targeting certain groups for, quote, security reasons, unquote. Either way, as the questioning begins and these panels begin, a couple of things to watch out for. Well, with Sessions, based on the questions asked so far, and we must keep in mind that although the confirmation process depends on the vote of the Senate, it's in the House that the civil rights leaders are hoping to get some kind of backing to persuade the members of the committee that they should ask tough questions of Sessions and keep an open mind because he has a very dubious history, especially in the area of civil rights. But it is not just limited to that. So I said that, though, to prime your thoughts about the process itself. All right, so Donald Trump has nominated a number of people to posts within his administration. The process is the same as it has always been, which is his nominees are to come before various committees in the Senate to be questioned closely about their own particular records, professional records, their thinking, their philosophy, and they will pose questions to the candidates to kind of get a sense of how they are likely to perform. And of course, because this process involves committees that are dominated by Republicans, because Republicans dominate the Senate, they have the Senate They also have the House, but the people who are opposing candidates like Sessions will more than likely get support from the Democrats. I mean, from would more than likely get opposition, I should say, from Democrats in the House. However, the House does not vote on candidates for cabinet-level posts. That's strictly a Senate issue. But we see the bleed over from the House into those candidates from the Senate, who are Democrats, carrying the sentiments or looking into the same subject areas as the opposition in the House, the Democratic opposition in the House, would have them do. And we have today Dianne Feinstein, the senior senator from California, carrying that torch a lot as a member of the committee questioning Sessions. But she's not, of course, the only person asking him tough questions. Other people are as well. Sessions comes to this process with a long and interesting history, I should say. Mostly, he is opposed by people who you would consider from the activist community, who point to disturbing trends they see throughout his professional career as a politician. Of course, as you know, he is from Alabama. He was the Attorney General of Alabama. He's being considered for U.S. Attorney General. He was in the U.S. Senate as well. He was the Attorney General of Alabama itself. So he has a long history of public service, but it is not entirely a pristine history. He has a checkered history here, and the Democrats are hoping that they could make enough of an impression through their questioning to point up this troubling history that he has had. On the other hand, Sessions has been known to be a straight-cut, ultra-conservative guy, a law and order guy, a man who has admitted that in his early career, he might have said things that weren't really reflective of who he was and is. Unfair things, racist things. But that's in the past. This is the main task he has to perform here, and he has been performing since this morning, of separating himself from these instances in which the civil rights community had balked at his actions and at his words. A couple of cases in which he went way off track and seemed to communicate a prejudicial attitude toward African Americans in particular, but not only African Americans. He seemed to have been caught in some instances saying very unkind things about same-sex marriage, about integration, if you will, and other things that just are not today, in today's world, especially not indicating that he has a healthy attitude toward diversity and inclusion. He certainly has had a long history of law and order, very, very right wing attitudes about law and order. In fact, today it was noted that, of course, he was supported by the Fraternal Order of Police. So, but it is all in line. I mean, Donald Trump would not have sought him out and would not have made him a nominee had he not himself identified with Sessions' views on things. Although Sessions today maintained a view that he is not into politics. He's strictly about the unbiased views, unbiased laws, strictly about following the law. And he can be depended upon as a U.S. Attorney General to do just that. Despite what people may think of his personal beliefs, he says that he, in the matter of law, he strictly adheres to the law of the land. He strictly adheres to the Constitution. He will stand up to Donald Trump when and if necessary, and he will strictly enforce the law. This is his general explanation today so far before the committee that is questioning him. It is a test, of course, because by the time he got before this committee, you can be sure that Sessions and all other candidates appearing before the committee have gone through many, many, many hours of preparation and rehearsal. So this is not a spontaneous process. This is a process that they prepare for to the nth degree, because the end goal, of course, is to be confirmed. And this is the last hurdle before confirmation and officially becoming a cabinet member in whatever area that Trump has selected them to serve. So we can't for a minute dismiss the fact that to a large degree, both sides, the committee members and the candidates coming before them, have rehearsed this process to the nth degree. On the flip side, where we have the members of the committee, their job, especially the job of the opposition, and the opposition here will be the Democrats. The Democrats will do everything to get to torpedo the candidate, and the Republicans will do everything possible to support the candidate. This is well rehearsed. But from today's hearing so far, what we're getting, although, you know, they're asking very good questions, but you're also getting a sense that the Democrats are weak. And they're asking questions that, you know, I would say that they're good questions. But in terms of the strategy, which is the overall strategy to torpedo Jeff Sessions, they're coming up kind of weak so far. He has been able to competently address every question that they have posed to him so far, and he has done so quite capably. And all I could think of was that, geez, if this is the first outing for the confirmation process, it looks like the Democrats will not succeed in basically defeating the nomination of many, if any, of Donald Trump's nominees. The Republicans are very strong, they're very well organized, and they know what their mission is. The Democrats, not so much. It is significant that the nomination of Jeff Sessions was objected to by a group of 1,200 lawyers across the country. And these are lawyers who are specifically conversant with civil rights and human rights issues. And they had written a joint letter some time ago, which is now part of the record, objecting to the appointment and the confirmation of Jeff Sessions. They say that he has an abysmal record on civil rights, and he should not be the U.S. Attorney General. They point to blatantly racist statements that he has made, some of them still contentious, and some of them he still denies. For example, he had at one point called the NAACP and the ACLU un-American. And he still says that he didn't do such a thing. He didn't call them un-American, and he continues to defend himself against that. But we have also people who are standing up for him, who are saying that they know him to be a straight shooter. They know him to be a man of impeccable character. They know him to be a very fair-minded person who will do everything in his power to obey and to protect the law, irrespective of who the target might be, that he believes in the equal application of the law. But questions abound about his attitudes toward immigration, his attitudes toward civil rights, his attitudes toward a number of areas of the law where he has come up on the other side of things. And this seems to be bothering a wide swath of the legal community as to whether he is a good choice for the U.S. Attorney General position. He has made it clear that he would not be, if it came to prosecuting Hillary Clinton, he would recuse himself because he was present, although he denies that he uttered the slogan, you know, put her in jail kind of thing. He said he didn't say that. He never said it. But he was present, and because he was present at rallies where that slogan was said, to maintain absolute purity here, he will not participate in the prosecution of Hillary Clinton. If there should be a prosecution, he would recuse himself. Some of the highlights of what he has said so far, he's talked about immigration policy. He says that immigration policy should address the national interest, not corporate interests. And by that he meant, of course, that it's the same thing as Donald Trump's line, that immigration has to be strictly regulated. It may suit the needs of many employers to have available to them an influx of immigrants who will, according to Sessions, will depress salaries, and there would be all kinds of social fallout from a massive inflow of immigrants. He did not toe the line with Trump on the business of immigrants accounting for a rise in crime. He didn't go there. He simply said that immigration should be in accordance with the national interests, not corporate interests. He talked about he defended himself on the question of the Voting Rights Act and other civil rights questions. He pointed to the fact that he has a record of defending people, civil rights, on civil rights issues, against people who have done great wrong, like the Klan. He talked about the fact that he is very, very dedicated to civil rights as an American right, as an American entitlement, if you will. So he talked about that. He talked about He talked about the fact that the society as a whole needs the kind of direction that Donald Trump and his administration will try to deliver, because intimating that, you know, it has gone to hell in a handbasket in a way, and that America needs to return to the guidance of the Constitution in its strictest sense and not make up laws simply to suit a particular situation because of political expediency, but that the constancy should be adhering to the Constitution, which should be strictly interpreted. And that's where he was going. He favored no tolerance for crime, that kind of thing. He was very, very clear that there needs to be some action there. But with regard to this role of attorney general, he generally sees it as a kind of mini U.S. Supreme Court, that it should follow policies consistent with the rulings of the Constitution and the U.S. Supreme Court. Now, all this sounds great, sounds wonderful. However, when we talk about philosophical questions and ideological questions, you'd find that people get really fuzzy, very, very fuzzy. The very fact that much of the discussion this morning centered on civil rights definitely proves that it continues to be a frayed fabric, a frayed thread in the fabric of American life. It has just never been strictly addressed, let alone solved. So, and this is an issue that Donald Trump himself has not taken that seriously. I mean, he doesn't deny that this is an issue. He has talked about that, but in a cursory way. He doesn't see it the way people see it. He sees it as one of those, you know, irritating things that should go away. And in such a case, you know, you get from him a very simplistic analysis, a very simplistic understanding of race and class in America. They see America in a very compartmentalized way. They don't see it as an integral part of American life. This is what we're dealing with every single day. To what degree, therefore, do the institutions of government reflect that understanding? That is a question, because the degree to which they understand this and begin to actively and vigorously work at eradicating these inequalities and the vestiges of an apartheid society, really, is a degree to which we make progress. So it's interesting looking at the whole scenario, a very organized, very carefully rehearsed on both sides, the committee members and the nominee, both all put through the paces. So there's nothing really unexpected to happen here. They are quite clear about the parameters. They know where they're going. They all know where they're going. And they have agreed clearly about the thrust of the questioning. For the Democrats, having taken a really serious defeat in this election, at every level, you know, federal, state, and local, they have just been clobbered with the Trump insurgency. They have a lot on their minds about how to defeat the system, how to regain ground lost. And it is so clear that they can't. They're making a lot of noises, but their cover has already been blown. They can't do it. The party is in a state of distress because it has ignored for a long time, because it got so comfortable with its power. It ignored the basics of politics, which is you have to be in touch with your constituency, and you have to maintain, that's how you maintain your political advantage, because being current, being in touch with the realities of the larger constituency helps you in your legislative tasks. You know what laws you should be pushing, and you know how to corral support. But the Democrats have been out of touch with their constituencies for a long time. Politics began to be, for years now, it's about, you know, your personal progress. What use are you making of this elective office that you hold? You know, what kinds of goodies are you going to get? And then you get out. And that's what politics has become for the Democratic Party, for many Republicans as well. But the Democrats in particular, who long had been assigned the role of maintaining civil rights protections in particular, and fighting for the underdog and so forth, they've lost all that. And it looks, if you really take a hard look, you can see how they're scrambling to just hold it together, knowing that it is all but certain that they're not going to gain much ground here. They're not going to gain much ground as a party because people have turned off. So it falls again. It's no coincidence, it's no surprise that today, as these hearings open up, you're seeing a dramatic presence being made by people. They're showing up to protest, but it's the people who are doing the work. And this is where we are. You know, we've been talking about this. You almost have to hope that somewhere along the line, the parties would, especially the Democratic Party, will get an idea about its purpose, its historic purpose, and see to it that somehow it remains true and faithful to it. But that hasn't happened. And as you look around, as the cameras panned the room, it is the people who are making their presence felt at a level that one would have expected the Democratic Party, the sentiments of the Democratic Party, the Democrats sitting on this committee, that should have been the sentiments of the members of the committee. But it is the people. So in the middle of all of this, that is a major thing you have to pay attention to. The party has lost its vigor. It has lost its advantage. And it, compared to the scientific preparation here of Trump and his nominees, they may not all be confirmed. After all, Jeff Sessions had been denied a federal judgeship before. So this, if he were to be denied the attorney general post, it would just be the second time for him that this would have happened. But what I'm drawing attention to here is that the work that goes into the political preparation, that is being done by the Republicans. the Democrats, when you look at the demeanor, you look at the energy, they are forecasting that just they just don't have it. It is the people who are fueling the thrust and the focus of the questioning of Sessions. Not so much the Democratic Party and its representatives. The cases that they are highlighting were cases brought by civil rights activists. You would think that they're all in the Senate. They should know each other. They should know where his soft spots are. And they should have asked some questions to reflect that. But, you know, they're asking questions that are easily answered, and Sessions is prepared. Sessions is prepared. So I imagine this would be a recurring theme throughout the confirmation process. And we should not dismiss it. It's very, very important. Because it tells us where the Democratic Party is right now. And whether people should really accelerate their own programs. Because this speaks to the question that we've been dealing with. There is no line of defense. There is no defense except the one that you create and the one that you follow up on. But looking at the configuration this morning, we are reminded of the fact that the people have to go it alone. There isn't very much to expect in terms of reinforcement of the issues and reinforcement of their concerns. And this would be the strategic time to score some points. But they don't have it. Just, you get the sense that it's a foregone conclusion unless there's something dramatic to happen where the Democrats regather themselves and they really understand that they are, in fact, in this process, they are the line between they're a line of defense against fascism. This is not just about your basic, you're not dealing here about a basic transition. This is not an ordinary transition from Obama's administration to Trump's administration. No, this is a very serious transition being made. And this should be an all-out fight. But that's not the tone we're getting from the Democrats. We're getting the tone that this is a procedural matter. They will ask in very polite terms, you know, some questions. But it is not like they are expecting to put up a fight here. It is as if they understand also that, well, you know, we'll go through the process, we'll have it on the record that we ask these questions and so forth. But they're not fighting. They're being very procedural. And so that the message has already gotten to them that the Trump machine is a juggernaut. It is running over everybody and everything. There's no point to resisting. Because if people felt that way, we would have a knockdown, drag-out fight as of this morning. When you are choosing the agents of the new order, which is fascistic, they were not acting like people who understood that. And that you have to really, you know, you've got to find some way to put up some resistance. But then, you know, it's just an issue with the party. The party has run out of steam. The party has run out of relevance. The party has run out of understanding its role. The party seems to have very little, if any, connection to the hopes and dreams and aspirations of the people who have supported it. So that Trump and his nominees are a direct contrast. They're ready for a fight. They've invested heavily in putting that face to the public, that you can trust us to do the right thing. You know, I was amazed watching it this morning. I urge you, if you have some time during the day or maybe later in the evening, to just take a look at a portion of Jeff Sessions' testimony and the hearing on Jeff Sessions today. I could be very, very wrong and very off point on how I interpreted what I saw and heard this morning. But I don't think so. I got the distinct impression that the Democrats have accepted defeat. And they, you know, they'll go through the rituals of asking questions because they have to look good, but they understand that they don't have the numbers. They don't have the numbers. And this confirmation process involves a select few. And among the select few, the Republicans dominate utterly. Well, I'll take a break and we'll come back and take your calls and we'll be discussing your ideas about the confirmation process and your feelings about how is this administration situating itself for blanket acceptance. You'll get some flack here and there, but so far they've gone ahead with their program with stunning success. They also look like they're crazy because it is scattered. And Trump himself, you know, people say how smart he is, and he has to be smart to some degree, but the way things are unfolding does not suggest that the Trump administration actually knows what it's doing. It is feeling things out as they go. But imagine, even with that, they look well organized. They look well prepared. They look confident, more so than the Democrats. So it tells us the state of affairs. And it reminds us more than ever that we have to look to ourselves for political salvation. This is what this is all about. It tells us in so many ways, you got to look out for yourself. Nobody else is doing it, nor will they be inclined to do it. This whole thing would be about getting their hands on more turf, more political real estate, to bring it to a Trump analogy, gaining ground and keeping it for as long as possible. And we have entered a very new era of politics. And they're still responding with business as usual tactics and business as usual techniques, the Democrats, I mean. And it is clear that they had the stuffings beaten out of them, and they've accepted that. They've caved in. So we have to get more serious and more careful. We can't ignore the fact of where we are. And where we are is we're on our own. And we have little, if any, protection. Right after this, at 888-874-4888, we'll take your calls and ask how you're feeling about that. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead. We're talking about the beginning today of the confirmation process with two nominees being questioned today. One is Senator Jeff Sessions from Alabama, and the other is the retired Marine General John Kelly. He comes on this afternoon. Incidentally, session will continue tomorrow. Your calls at 888-874-4888. Ma'at, you on the air.
I'll be right there. Can you hear me? I'm coming.
Okay.
Okay, thanks so much. Greetings to the beloved family. Well, if I can say the F word, and that is fascism, that's what it is. I heard some snatches of it as I was listening to NPR, and that was really enough. And, you know, what I'm trying to look at one point is realizing something that Dr. Clark always told us, that, you know, we tend to assume that progress is a straight and upward line. But it seems to me, and I guess this is where people like Garvey and even Elijah Muhammad and Malcolm X come in, because it seems to me that in one fell swoop, black people can be set back 100 years. That's one thought that I have.
Well, I think you're right about that. But I also see that in a moment that counts, we're not quite present and accounted for in our own defense. And that is what I'm talking about. With such a momentous change about to happen in terms of governance, one would think that we would have on this committee a very aggressive element that would focus attention on issues that really, really do matter. And, I mean, they asked some questions that were relevant, but certainly not really hitting home, not bringing to the fore the necessity for this, because I guess in order to do that, they would have to admit or they would have to factor in the failure also of the Obama administration. So it would be ironic, and if you understand where I'm going, it would be ironic to insist that this new administration take on a burden that the previous administration did not, the previous Democratic administration. And as you know, in this particular area of U.S. Attorney General, haven't we talked many, many times about the failure of the Justice Department?
Yeah. In fact, Eutrice, I want to make a comment on that. One of the things that I never hear discussed is the fact that the FBI was assigned. So there's certain very significant civil rights laws on the books. I think Title 18, 142, and 3. A lot of people aren't familiar with them, but they're written very well. And the FBI is the designated agency that's supposed to enforce it. So you have a agency with the history of COINTELPRO and Hoover et al. And yet they're the ones. And so recently, before this most recent change, the Department of Justice had decided that they were going to take the Eric Garner case from the local FBI in New York and DOJ because they weren't doing the job right. And so that's going to not go anywhere. But I thought it was interesting. The DOJ under Lynch was going to assign it to her D.C. team, right? But we've never dealt with the fact that the FBI is the one that is supposed to respond when you send them a civil rights complaint. And that never happens, you know. So I'll leave with that and listen to the other callers. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you. Well, that's a very important point. And this is, again, this is what was so clear to me this morning. This is about the U.S. Attorney General's office. And there are so many questions that should be asked with respect to the function and authority of this office, relating to many specific groups in the United States, and not just civil rights. You see, the idea is that we've gotten used to this phrase, you know, it's the civil rights. No, it's a time that we recognize that these investigations aren't about civil rights. They ought to be about human rights, you know, the rights of citizens. And we are going to be continuing, except perhaps in more pronounced fashion, the administration's view that the rights somehow of people of color and other designated groups are different from the rights of all citizens. So you have a civil rights investigation when somebody's murdered by the police, when it should be just your basic, vigorous investigation that other groups get routinely. So these kinds of questions were not raised, and I don't think they will be raised, because, again, the Democrats can't ask questions that suggest that they're expecting more from Sessions than what they got under Obama, and they seemed quite content with it. That level of mediocrity and lack of performance under Obama has set its own standard. That's the standard as it applies to African Americans, Latinos, people of color across the board, people from segmented groups. And they missed the whole point. And that is why, you see, we can't play politics. We have to risk embarrassing people that we supposedly love more than everybody else and we want to protect. That's not what happens here. Trump is clear. His nominee this morning was clear. I expect his other nominees would be very clear, similarly clear. They have a compatibility, Trump and his nominees. They understand what they want to accomplish, and they are on point, and they have begun. This is not just, as I said, this is not just about switching from one administration to the other. This is a whole overhaul, and it's being made to look very much like what has gone on before, except, you know, we have a little difference in philosophy and so forth. But make no mistake, this is a monumental change that is happening, and precisely at a time that we need as much ammunition as we can muster, we find ourselves, where are we? Where is our backup? Where is our congressional backup? Where is the Democratic Party? Where are the other parties in all this? The other parties that claim that they're very, very much for the people and so forth, where are you? But when the cameras pan today, and if you look again, you'll see it is the people, the ordinary people who are deeply involved, who are very serious about what this new administration is about to do, and who are the ones putting up a resistance. Do we continue to accept that? I don't think it should be accepted. I think we really need to point out that this is happening, and we need to know why. Why? But these are the facts of life. Things change, and people have, you know, very different views on what is important. They want to, you know, some of them just want to get out. They retired or of retirement age. They spent more than 30 or 40 years in Congress. They're tired, and they just want to go home. There's not much fight left in them. And so they will be quite ceremonious and quite, you know, following protocol, etc. But you don't get the feeling, watching this hearing as it started today, that they're bringing it. They're on top of things. They are fighting. Because they, more than any of us perhaps, they know what the agenda is, they know what is ahead, and they should be doing their utmost to defeat it. But instead today we got a very clear picture that it is they who are defeated. It's they who are defeated. Well, I don't know if we have time for another call where somebody could just stretch out and explain things the way they want to. So we'll kind of close very shortly. And I want to ask you to visit somewhere today a snippet of the hearings and see what conclusion you come to. What do you observe? What is the environment in which this thing is beginning to happen? What do you get from the nominees? What are you getting from members of the committees that are questioning them? And in turn, what do you get about the shift in ideology that will fuel this administration's attitudes toward governance? It was so evident today. And it got routine coverage. You know, they said, well, this is what he said about this. This is what he said about that. But we're not getting analysis. And we really will not be smart to expect that we will get deep analysis of what anybody is saying. Because the message also has gotten to the media that just go along and we'll be fine. Just go along with what you see, what we tell you is happening, and we'll be fine. You'll be fine. I looked and looked, and I didn't see anything critical. The most that I saw in the way of being critical would be op-ed pieces, not reporting, but op-ed pieces, editorial positions taken by people other than staff. So this is how they're getting around the issue of saying, well, it's not us. We ourselves are not criticizing you, Mr. Trump, and your nominees, but we do have an obligation to print opinion pieces that represent a different view. So that's how they're getting around it. I haven't seen so far any direct, serious criticism of Trump and his nominees, but certainly maybe it's too early because the nomination process, the hearings began just today. We'll see whether CNN and the other members of the media, mainstream media, really decipher for the nation what is happening here. It's a huge story. And I think if this is how it's starting off, with people just being stenographers rather than reporters and journalists, they're just copying down and taping what people are saying without telling us the significance of it, without describing the political environment of these hearings, and without telling us what it is we are hearing and seeing, and how it predicts where the Trump administration as a whole will be going, with these members coming before these various committees to be questioned what they have to say. Well, thank you for joining us today. I really appreciate it. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com and let me know what your thoughts are. In the meantime, do try and get some measure of what happened today. Just observe. The Infectious Myth with David Crowe is up next. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.